The aim of our Living with Diabetes podcasts is to share information and inspire, and we endeavour to ensure that the information provided in them is accurate. It's not a substitute for medical or health advice from a healthcare professional who's aware of the facts and circumstances of your individual situation. We always recommend that advice be sought from your GP or diabetes nurse before making any changes to medication or before using any products or services referenced by DRWF. DRWF will not be held liable or responsible for failure to seek competent medical or health advice from a professional who's familiar with your situation. Views, information, or opinions contained in podcasts do not necessarily represent opinions, standards, or policies of DRWF. The inclusion of details about products or services does not indicate DRWF endorsement of them.
Hello and welcome to the latest Living with Diabetes special podcast, looking at research supported by Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. I'm Claire Levy, and in this edition you can hear my discussion with someone who's been working with us for over 10 years and has now joined our board of trustees. Her research has been investigating the various aspects of genetic forms of diabetes in minority ethnic groups and subsequently the identification of MODY, maturity onset diabetes of the young in multi-ethnic populations. I spoke with Dr. Shivani Misra to discover more.
My name's Shivani Misra and I'm a senior lecturer in diabetes and a diabetes consultant at Imperial College London.
So just as a bit of a look back and a catch up, DRWF funded your PhD in 2012 and it was a critical first step in getting you on the research ladder. Can you just give us a bit of a think about how important that initial funding was and how involved has the charity been with you over the years?
Yes, of course. So I've sort of talked about this before, and it's never an underestimate for me to say that the DRWF Earl Sutherland Earl Fellowship was absolutely critical in getting me on that first rung of the academic ladder. And, you know, if we rewind back to 2011-12, I was a trainee in metabolic medicine and I was thinking about undertaking some research. I got hooked on diabetes and started to develop ideas, but translating that into an actual PhD project is a really, really big step. And so I'd applied for lots of different funding schemes, including the DRWF. But I think, you know, by the time my application went into the DRWF, it was a really strong application. And I think also I often reflect on the fact that the DRWF probably took a little bit of a risk in funding me, because my project at the time was a very new thing and no one had really been working on looking for genetic forms of diabetes in minority ethnic groups, which was the crux of my project. And so it was very attractive because it was a new thing, but it was also a bit risky because generally funders like to fund things that, you know, have certainty around them in terms of producing the goods. So I often reflect on that, the fact that, you know, it was really the DRWF that had invested in me as an individual. And I really just want to stress that, because it has been, a fellowship is a personal award, but with really large funding bodies, it can often feel quite impersonal. And that's not been my experience with DRWF at all. So we have kept in touch for so long. I think the first time I met you, Claire, was when I did a 10K charity run for the DRWF in London. And that was probably 7 or 8 years ago. So we've been in touch. And then, as you know, that relationship has become stronger with time. And so it's just been a very personal and rewarding journey for me, both academically, but also in terms of professional development.
So you've been appointed to the UK Board of Trustees by DRWF. How does that make you feel, and what does it mean to you now?
Well, Claire, I mean, it was just such a surprise when Sarah, the chief executive, you know, contacted me about this potential role, because like many women in medicine and science, I don't see myself in the way that other people do. And so when she first contacted me, I thought, me? Really? You want me to be on the board of trustees? But it was a phenomenal honor, really, to be able to contribute and give back to the DRWF who funded me so many years ago. And it's been a wonderful experience that has connected me with international colleagues, the other trustees on the board, but also in terms of professional development. You know, I've learned a lot by being on the board. So, I mean, in terms of the story, though, it's wonderful, isn't it, to go from being a humble PhD student to making it onto the board of trustees of an internationally renowned diabetes charity. So, you know, it's just been truly wonderful to stay connected with the DRWF in this way.
You were featured as part of the Evening Standard's annual Progress 1000 list of 18 key influential Londoners in 2018, featured in the list health category for your research into the causes of diabetes. Patients that might have been misdiagnosed because of misconceptions. What happened since 2018?
Yeah, that was, you know, really lovely to be listed in the Evening Standard list. And what they picked up on were some preliminary findings from the My Diabetes study, which is actually what the DRWF funding enabled me to set up. And this is a large multi-centre study that has now this year finally closed. And at the time that I completed my PhD, we'd recruited about 600 individuals who had been diagnosed at young age and were from Black and Asian minority ethnic groups in the UK. And what's happened now is we've managed to recruit just under 1,800 individuals from those groups. And we're in a really exciting stage of doing the final analysis. And essentially, it does show that some cases are being missed in people from different ethnic groups. That's cases of genetic diabetes, which are obviously quite rare, but it's good if you can make the diagnosis. So definitely some cases are being missed. But what it's also shone a light on is the very large numbers of young people from other ethnic groups who have type 2 diabetes developing at young age. And so in terms of what's gone on since 2018, well, we're in the final stages of the My Diabetes study and getting those results published. But I've also been able to apply for more funding from the Wellcome Trust, which I was successful in getting last year, which will now fund me for another 5 years to really study this group of high-risk individuals where they're developing type 2 diabetes at young age.
So you've given us a bit of an update there on the My Diabetes study. Where are you with the research into MODY and what has your research discovered?
Yeah, so I guess I sort of touched on that in the previous question, but to just elaborate. So what we wanted to do was answer the question, why have we not found many Asian and African Caribbean people in England with MODY? And we knew this from analysis of existing data sets, which I worked on with collaboration with Andrew Hattersley and the Exeter team. And we knew that there were very small numbers of Asian and Black people in that data set who'd been found to have MODY. So the question then is, do they just have fewer cases of MODY? Maybe it's not common in those ethnic groups. Or are we as healthcare professionals testing the wrong people and missing the cases? So that was the reason for setting up the My Diabetes study. And what we sought to do was just take everyone under the age of 30 with any type of diabetes and use biomarkers and genetic tests to see what type of diabetes they have. Was it type 1? Was it type 2? Was it MODY? So I can't give you the final results because we're still looking at it. So watch this space for later this year. But as I mentioned, we definitely seem to be missing cases of MODY. But it looks like because there's so many more cases of early onset type 2 diabetes, it's actually quite hard to segregate, to identify the MODY cases from within the group of individuals that have type 2. And so as with all research, one thing leads to another, doesn't it? You never get a final answer and then that's the end of it. So what this has led to is this larger project that I mentioned from the Wellcome Trust, which will now fund me for 5 years to really look at this group with early onset type 2 diabetes. How are they different? Why are they developing type 2 diabetes early on? And some of the work that I've already done, for example, has shown that in England, at least, we have about 129,000 people with type 2 diabetes living under the age of 40. So that number seems to be going up and up and up. And it's not just a problem in England, it's a problem globally. So my lens has really shifted from the Modi work, which kind of got me set on this path, but it's moved more towards early onset type 2 diabetes, which is not uncommon, like Modi, hugely relevant and a bit of a ticking time bomb globally, really, because what I didn't mention, and I will stop in a minute, what I didn't mention is that these individuals that develop type 2 diabetes at young age are far more likely to progress to complications, including heart attacks, strokes, and other complications of diabetes. And unfortunately, many of them seem to die, you know, 5 to 7 years earlier compared to people without type 2 diabetes. So it seems to be very high risk to develop this condition early on in life. And so that's where my attention is focused now.
Just let us know what MODI stands for.
Yes, MODI, sorry. Yeah. MODI stands for maturity onset diabetes of the young. We're using it less and less now, but it's one of those things that is instantly recognizable as a term, but it essentially means that someone has a genetic form of diabetes, and that's completely different to type 1 and type 2 diabetes. So there's lots of different types of diabetes, and MODI is a separate one to type 1 and type 2.
Can you just say why funding from charities like DRWF is so important for researchers?
Oh, it's phenomenally important because, you know, not just for me personally, and that I got funding from the DRWF and it's made my career, which is obviously important to me, but it really is important for people living with diabetes. That's the major thing. And I haven't really talked about them so far in this discussion, but you know, one of the things that the DRWF is so good at doing is actually involving people with diabetes in formulating how it functions. And, you know, that seeps through to the research agenda as well. So the funding is so important because, for example, in my case, my research evolved from a question that a patient, an Asian patient, asked me in the clinic. She said, could I have this genetic form of diabetes that I've read up about? I don't know if it exists in Asian people. And that's, you know, those sorts of questions and those sorts of dilemmas that exist for people living with diabetes are so important to answer. And the only way that we can answer that is from getting research funding. And I hope, at least in my research career, I've proven to people that do donate to charities like DRWF that it is so important and meaningful, not just for me as an individual, but for the wider diabetes community.
Has your research translated yet into patient care?
Oh, yes. I actually think it has a little bit, you know. So there are some national guidelines around MODI testing in minority ethnic groups. And some of the early work that I did and published has formulated some of those guidelines. And actually, I work very collaboratively with the MODI team in Exeter, and the findings from this final analysis of the My Diabetes study will definitely support, if we need to, changing those national guidelines. So I think actually it's always the panacea for a researcher to be able to say that, well, I did this and 5 years later it's changed, you know, this person's life. And often that doesn't happen, to be frank, because it takes a long time for discoveries to actually make a difference to an individual person. But in this case, I think we have been lucky because this was an untouched area of research, you know, because no one had done anything. The findings are so important in the development of national guidelines. So I'm really hopeful that we'll be able to change the guidelines. I don't know how they would change. They might not need to, but it will definitely have an impact in doing that. And the other thing that's exciting is that, again, working collaboratively with the Modi team in Exeter, we are developing an app that will allow doctors and nurses to decide who to test for Modi. And they've already developed an app like this, but they haven't got it working for people from minority ethnic groups. So the research that was funded by DRWF, the findings from that study, the My Diabetes study, will definitely help in developing that app. And we've been able to secure funding for that. You know, I think obviously I am biased because DRWF funded me and I'm on the board. So that's my disclaimer. But it is really such a lovely community to be a part of. And I am phenomenally grateful that that I was able to secure funding from DRWF, because it's, you know, set me on my path. And that personal contact that we have maintained I know that a lot of researchers don't have that with their funders. So it's just been a wonderful relationship.
My thanks to Dr. Shivani Misra for talking to us about her work.
Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. Staying well until a cure is found.
Look out for more episodes of our special podcast discussing research supported by DRWF and the advances being made. To discover how you can continue to help the charity, together with the latest fundraising events, news and information, it's all on our website at drwf.org.uk. I'm Claire Levy from Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. Until next time, thanks for joining us on Living with Diabetes.
Living with Diabetes is a Blue Aurora media production for DRWF. Copyright 2023. Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. All rights reserved.